थे वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's text 25, is it not? I think so, yeah. So I'm going to run through the verse itself. It's a long purport, and there's a lot of commentary today, so just bear with me. Evam vidaneka gunasaraja Paratmani Brahmani Vasudeve Kriyakalapai Samuvaha Bhaktim Yayavinshiyan Nirayam Shakaram. Evam vidaneka gunasaraja Paratmani Brahmani Vasudeve Kriyakalapai Samuvaha Bhaktim Yaya Vinshayan Rayam Chakara Evam Vidaneka Gunasaraja Paratmani Brahmani Vasudeve Kriyakalapai Samuvaha Bhaktim Yaya Virinchyan Nirayam Chakara Please chant. Ladies, please. No one else? Okay.
Evam.
In this way. Vida aneka gunha. Endowed with varieties of good qualities. Saha. He, Maharaj Ambarish. Raja. The king. Paratmani. Unto the Supersoul. Brahmani. Unto Brahman. Vasudevi. Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna. Vasudeva. Kriyakalapai. By practical activities. Samuvaha. Executed. Bhaktim. Devotional service. Yaya. By such activities. Avrinchyan. Beginning from the topmost planet. Nirayan. Down to the hellish planets. Chakara. He experienced that there is danger everywhere. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki. In this way, because of devotional service, Maharaj Ambarish, who is endowed with varieties of transcendental qualities, was completely aware of Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus he executed devotional service perfectly. Because of his devotion, he thought even the topmost planet of this material world no better than the hellish planets. Purport. An exalted and pure devotee like Maharaj Ambarish is in full awareness of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. In other words, a devotee of Vasudeva, Krishna, is in full knowledge of the other features of the Absolute Truth. The Absolute Truth is realized in three features: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan iti sabjate, from the Bhagavatam 1:2:11. A devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, knows everything. Vasudeva sarvam iti, as from the Bhagavad Gita 7:19. So this should not be misinterpreted, as sometimes it is. First of all, 7:19 is, after many births and deaths, he who is in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all there is. So that this is not misinterpreted, what is being said is not that Maharaj Ambarish has become omniscient or as omniscient as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is as omniscient as the Supreme Personality of Godhead wants him to be. If he wants to know something, he needs to know something, then since the Supreme Lord knows everything, he will and can give him that information and he will know it. So, unlike many of us, we may hope or desire or want some information, but it just doesn't come. We have to go to the internet and go to Google it. But Ms. Ambarish Maharaj didn't have to go to those extents. All he had to do is basically ask for it, and it would come to him. This is the nature of a pure devotee who has complete connection, a complete relationship in which there is no obstacle, no hindrance between himself and the Supreme Lord. Okay? Next. One does not have to realize Paramatma by the yoga system. For the devotee, always thinking of Vasudeva is the topmost yogi. Yoginam api sarvesham. That's from the Bhagavad Gita 6:47, which is one of the most famous and important verses when you're dealing with Mayavadis. And of all yogis, the one with great faith who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me, he is most what? Yes, intimately united with me in yoga. That is my opinion, Krishna says. So this is that's a very important verse. Everyone should know it. And as far as jnana is concerned, if one is a perfect devotee of Vasudeva, he is the greatest Mahatma. Vasudeva sarvam iti sam Mahatma sudalabha. A Mahatma is one who has full knowledge of the absolute truth. Thus Maharaj Ambarish, being a devotee of the personality of Godhead, was in full awareness of Paramatma, Brahman, Maya, the material world, the spiritual world, and how things are going on everywhere. Everything was known to him. Yasmin vigyate sarvam evam vigyatam bhavati, from the Mundaka Upanishad 1:3. Because the devotee knows Vasudev, he knows everything within the creation of Vasudev. Vasudeva sarvam iti samahatma sudulobha. Such a devotee does not give much value to the highest standard of happiness within this material world. Excuse me. Narayana para sarve na kutaschana bibhyati. Svarga pavarga narakeshu api tulyarta darshana. That's from the Srimad Bhagavatam 6:17:28 for anyone who wants to look that up later. So we're just finishing the purport now. And this is a big tongue twister for me, because it's one of those long, long Sanskrit verses. It's coming up. Because he is fixed in devotional service, a devotee does not regard any position in the material world as important. Srila Prabodhanandana Sarasvati has therefore written from the Chaitanya Chandamrita, number 5, Kaivalyam narakayate tri dashapur akasa pushpayate durdantendriya kala sarpa patali putakata damstrayate vishvam purna sukayate vidhi mahendra dishcha kitayate yat karunya kataksha Vaibhavatam tam goram eva stumaha. For one who becomes a pure devotee through devotional service to great personalities like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Kaivalya, or merging into Brahman, appears no better than hell. As far as the heavenly planets are concerned, to a devotee they are like a phantasmagoria or will-o'-the-wisp. And as far as a yogic perfection is concerned, a devotee does not care a fig for such perfection, since the purpose of yogic perfection is achieved automatically by the devotee. This is all possible when one becomes a devotee of the Lord through the medium of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions, ki. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, ki. Omagyana timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshud unmalitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, has opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. Okay, no flashes though at this time. So we have some very important, many points. Actually, it's enough here for at least a 4-hour lecture, but I'll spare you the the burden of that. And we'll just try to complete at 8:15 or somewhere between 8:15 and 8:20. So first of all, getting back to the original verse, which I'd like to just repeat the English in this. In this way, because of devotional service, Maharaj Ambarish, who was endowed with varieties of transcendental qualities, was completely aware of Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus he executed devotional service perfectly. Because of his devotion, he thought even the topmost planet of this material world no better than the hellish planets. That's something very interesting and very ironic. Lord Brahma to be no better than the hellish planets, when in the previous verse in the purport, Srila Prabhupada said everyone in Brahmaloka is a self-realized being. And yet King Ambarish, he feels that to attain or to achieve the planet of Brahmaloka is no better than even the hellish planets. Why would he say something like that? He would say it because he knows he's got something far better, far superior, far greater than anything going on in the in Brahmaloka. The hellish planets, we know that there's lots and lots of suffering. But we also know from the Bhagavad Gita, from the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. So that means there's misery in Brahmaloka, but not the same amount of miseries in the hellish planets or the lower planets, or even on this planet. Misery is everywhere. According to the different modes that are acting upon us, a person who is who is in the mode of goodness, he has some misery. A person in the mode of passion, he has more misery. And a person in the mode of ignorance has the most misery. Because he's in complete ignorance. He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know what not to do. He does things incorrectly. He thinks incorrectly. He acts in ways which cause suffering and pain and all sorts of difficulties for himself. Because he's in ignorance. It's like if you want to reach some place and you don't know how to get there, then you can very easily get lost. And many people do. So, therefore, misery is throughout the material world, including the Brahmaloka. So how are they in Brahmaloka? How would they become miserable? Well, there are different ways. First of all, let me give a little example of a subtle form of misery. Let's take Lord Brahma. He had a little misery. His misery was the wonder that little Krishna was his master. Could this little cute, adorable, lovable boy be my master? I mean, you know, he looks so fetching, so you just want to pick him up and give him a hug. So is he the one who's running the whole universe? Is he the one who's giving me my guidance? He doesn't look like Lord Vishnu. He just looks like a cute, lovable little boy. So that question began to puzzle him. It disturbed him to such an extent that he would commit a most horrible offense, testing his spiritual master. He will test Krishna and try to find out whether he is, quote, my master, or whether he's just another little boy. So what does he do? He steals the little calves. And then he steals the boys. And then he goes back to Brahmaloka for a second of his time and a year of our time. And so Krishna, when he comes, he's looking for his cowherd boyfriends. He's looking for the calves. And they're nowhere to be found because Brahma has them hidden in some cave. So he knew what the story was. And he didn't want to come home without his boyfriends and the calves. Everybody would become disturbed. The whole community said, where's our children? Because as it's mentioned, that the parents cannot live without the children. They love them so much and they give them so much meaning and so much satisfaction. So Krishna simply, he expanded himself into all the cowherd boys and all the calves. So when Brahma came back, you know, first he went into the little cave where everybody was all the cowherd boys and calves were lying. He saw they were there. Then he went out into the meadow, and he saw that all the boys are there. Well, wait a minute. I just saw them in the cave. How can they be here? So he goes back out to the meadow, and he looks at, well, they're here. How did they go from there to there before I even reached there? So he goes back to the cave, and he looks, and they're there. Well, now he's on the verge of a nervous breakdown. He can't figure how they can be here, and how can they be there? So then Krishna did another thing to kind of make him go even a little crazier. Is that he turned all of the cowherd boys into Vishnu forms. All the calves into Vishnu forms. So then Lord Brahma, he just didn't know what to do. Anyway, finally, Krishna relieved him of the suffering that he was going. As I said, my words were that even a person in Brahma Loka can suffer. And here's an example of it. So he realized he had committed a very terrible offense to the Supreme Lord. To test your master is a terrible thing. For example, the great devotees who are completely surrendered, they don't test. Do you ever see Hanuman test Lord Ramachandra? Of course not. Does Akura test Krishna? Of course not. Does Uddhava test Krishna? Of course not. Does Daruka, his charioteer, test Krishna? Never. These are not the things of a pure devotee. And these devotees go back home, back to Godhead. They don't go to Brahma Loka because they're highly advanced. So that's one of the ways. And what happens is that as a result of this offense, Lord Brahma felt so ashamed. He felt so terrible that he had tried to play a trick on his master. How dare me to do such a thing? He saw the power that Krishna was manifesting. First, he made him go crazy by expanding himself into the cowherd boys and the calves. And then he expanded himself further into all these Vishnu forms, and then he made them all disappear. So he realized that he was really playing with fire. He threw himself down in front of the feet of the Lord, and he begged for forgiveness, which is another nice sign that Lord Brahma, although he is a pure devotee, sometimes Prince says, if he's a pure devotee, how could he do what he did? There are different levels of pure devotion. There are different levels of self-realization. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the previous purport that everyone in Brahma Loka is a self-realized soul. Oh, if he's feeling so, how could he be suffering? Well, there are different degrees of realization. For example, one may see Krishna once a day. One may see Krishna once in 2 days. One may see Krishna every 50 minutes. One may see Krishna every 20 minutes. One may see Krishna as Srila Prabhupada saw Krishna every moment. Higher, 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 not everything one. Okay? And Srila Prabhupada stated that. He says, yes, I see Krishna wherever I am, and I can speak with Krishna whenever I want to. This is pure devotee on the highest level. So because it says they're all self-realized, it doesn't mean they're all the same. Another way that they suffer in Brahma Loka is, for example, they are experiencing different degrees of ecstasy, different degrees of bliss. Thank you. Different degrees of ecstasy and different degrees of bliss. So when we experience that transcendental ecstasy or bliss, it is quite intense. It is quite absorbing. Quite rapturous. it's very easily... sorry... to become attached to the ecstasy, the bliss. To begin to think, yes, I'm so advanced. I'm experiencing so much happiness. I'm so exalted. When a devotee begins to think in those terms, he's becoming less and less of a devotee. He's becoming prouder and prouder and prouder. I'm so happy. I'm so joyous. Look at all those people in the lower planets in Tapaloka and Janaloka and Martyaloka. They don't have what I have. This is a form of pride. I'm so joyful. I'm so... So when we begin to think, and this it pertains to us right here on this planet, right here in this room, when we begin to think of ourselves and our pleasures and our blessings and our benedictions in the sense of that, yes, I'm so wonderful, I'm so great, I'm so glorious. Wow, just look at me. I'm getting so much Mahaprasadam. Devotees are glorifying me, adoring me, looking up to me. When we begin to think in those terms, we are going down. When we begin to think of you're experiencing bliss, you're experiencing happiness, experiencing ecstasy. Wow, Krishna is so wonderful. Krishna is so glorious. Krishna is so amazing. He's giving me this, me. I am so fallen, so wretched, so worthless, so useless. I have so many bad qualities. I've committed so many sins and wrongs and evils. And yet, Krishna is giving me, this. Oh, how wonderful, how marvelous, how glorious is Krishna. Do you see the difference? In one case, we think of ourselves more and more and more, and we go down, down, down. And what happens is that when we begin thinking of ourselves more and more and more, the result of that is the level of ecstasy begins to decrease proportionately. Krishna withdraws the ecstasy. All of the ecstasy comes from Krishna's mercy. He simply infuses the soul with himself, pure love. And when the soul receives pure love, it feels that bliss, it feels that happiness. But when we begin to feel that we are the all in all, as Lord Brahma might, as Lord Indra does, as the demigods sometimes do, then what happens is that Krishna withdraws the ecstasy, and what happens? We don't feel as happy. We don't feel as joyful. Something's wrong. What did I do wrong? So, of course, persons in Brahmaloka, they're quite savvy. They're quite smart. And they can meditate on this. They can pray to the Lord, what did I do wrong? And they'll get the answer. What you did wrong is you put all the emphasis or your concentration on you when you're supposed to be serving me, meaning Krishna. That's what Krishna tells them. What are you doing? You're becoming like a worldly person again. So then they realize, my business is to glorify Krishna, honor Krishna, celebrate Krishna, applaud Krishna, dance for Krishna, sing for Krishna, share Krishna, here, there, and everywhere. That wonderful experience that we get when we give out books to people, and they open the books, and there's the hope, there's the potential that they will come out of their misery, the same misery that we experienced for so many, many years as we were growing up. That should bring us great delight because we're putting them in touch with, putting them in attunement with the Supreme Lord, the one who is giving us happiness, joyfulness, ecstasy, fullness, satisfaction, fulfillment. They're going to get the same. Maybe today, maybe tomorrow, maybe next year, maybe 5 years, 10 years, maybe 50 years, maybe next life, just from touching that book. It is so holy. It is so sacred. It is so glorious. These are Prabhupada's words. I'm not making them up. A person sees the book, touches the book. It is so sacred. So whether they achieve God realization today, in 5 years, in 50 years, in 50 lives, those of us who have put that book in the person's vision or on his hands or enabled him to read it have contributed as agents of the Supreme Lord to that person's transformation from misery to real, true ecstasy. So there we have how we can, even in a self-realized stage, not a highly self-realized stage, but in a self-realized stage, self-realization means you get a chance to see Krishna. You may see the heart, you may see him, you may have a vision. But that doesn't mean we stop there. And King Ambarish was so savvy, he was so knowledgeable, he was so understanding of all this. He knew that what he had, which was pure love of God, every moment, every second. And not only that, he did not envy the mystic yogis. He didn't have to, as it is mentioned in this purport. A person who is as advanced as King Ambarish, although we don't see any particular display of mystical powers, nonetheless he has them. Now that should tell us something about him. The yogis like to put on their little shows. I walk on water, you know, you fly in the sky like Durvasa. You know, you can put your hand out and a mango appears on it. I don't mean to get anybody hungry. You got another 10 minutes before breakfast, so I'll spare you. Anyway, put a hand out, a mango is there. Person can make himself as large as a mountain. Hanuman made himself as large as a mountain. He didn't come back and say, "Hey, did you see how big I was?" He didn't say that. He disregarded it. It's just the power Ram gave me. I use it and then I forget about it. Forget about it. Because it's not his. It belongs to the Supreme Lord, Ram. And when you use something that is Lord's, if you know it belongs to him and not yourself, and that it's borrowed, then you give all glory to the Supreme Lord, not ourselves. Our only position should be how grateful I am. How glorious is my life because God has bestowed upon me such a blessing, such a benediction, such a joy. He's giving me the opportunity to perform devotional service. It is mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion that devotional service is a rare opportunity. It's rare. How many people in this world are performing loving devotional service? Virtually none, except, you know, what Srila Prabhupada has generated. Real devotional service. So because we have received it, we should not take it cheaply. Because if we take it cheaply and we begin to act indifferently towards it, or we're doing this movement a favor, or I'm doing the world a favor, or I'm such a wonderful devotee, any of those types of thoughts will cause us to slowly but surely fall down to the depths of worldliness, mundaneness, and we will lose the path of devotional service. How many devotees, sannyasis, GBCs, gurus fell because of this very reason? I'm important, I'm great, I'm wonderful, everybody is throwing themselves at my feet. Instead of thinking I'm nothing, I'm worthless, I'm useless, I'm good for nothing, whatever they are worshipping in me is really should go to Krishna because he's the one they are really worshipping. They're worshipping the power that he has bestowed upon me. So in my mind, it should be, my Lord, thank you for using me, but I will not keep this. It is pure poison for me. It may be nectar for you, and you can have that nectar. I don't want it. It's yours. So we retain our position as loving servants of the Lord. That is our ever-present position. And as soon as we start thinking, because we may fall into a position of a higher rank, a higher position, some glorious situation, that's okay. People applaud you. People honor you. People thank you. Should we say, no. Prabhupada never did that. People gave him a garland, he took the garland. People gave him some sweets, he accepted the sweet. Everything Srila Prabhupada accepted graciously as coming from God through the devotee. So if something is coming from Krishna through the devotee, should I wag it away? Should I shoo it away? Of course not. You accept it, you cherish it. Thank you, Krishna, for considering me. I, who am so fallen, but you're giving me an opportunity to serve. You're giving me different kinds of powers and glories. So I thank you again and again and again. This goes on inside. You don't have to put on a show. Just see my, oh, Krishna, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. You don't have to do that. So everybody can see, oh, well, he's very grateful. Oh, look how grateful he is. You know? So that's not necessary. What is covered, what is hidden is much more powerful than that which is displayed. In fact, when you display those particular features of modesty or humility, you lose the value that you, the merit that you have is lost. It's lost in egotism. You counteract it. Humility is a great virtue. But if you take pride and you mix it with the humility, what happens to the humility? It becomes overwhelmed and overcome and lost. So that's what we learn from King Ambarish. He was humble. So humble was he. It's so interesting that when Durvasa Muni came from the Vishnu Loka and he came down, he flew down, the first thing he did was what? Anybody remember what he did? First thing he did is he grabbed the feet of King Ambarish and apologized for what he had done. And what was King Ambarish's reaction, his response? His response was he felt ashamed. This great, he was putting the yogi on a higher platform than he was. He's an ascetic. He performs austerities. He has mystical powers. I don't have these, although he did have them. But he never would use them because he had no reason to show them off. He simply depended upon Krishna, and Krishna made arrangements. And from those arrangements, he accomplished what he had to. So he looked up to Durvasa Muni, and he felt ashamed that a person whom he felt was higher than him was bowing down and begging for forgiveness and begging for mercy. Just see his humility. He's a king. He's not some sweeper. He's a king. And yet, there he is feeling ashamed. And not only that, he's fasted for a whole year on water, waiting for this yogi to return, praying for that nothing bad should happen, that the Sudarshan Chakra should not kill him. Just see this mentality. We can learn so much from it. So when we read these books, we read these purports, we read these translations, they're not merely to be read, they're to be savored. Savored means you, for example, you take a piece of food, you put it on prasadam, you put it in your mouth, you chew it three times and swallow it. That's not savoring it. And a lot of people eat just that way. Prasadam is the mercy of Krishna. So you keep it in, you move it to the right side, move it to the left side, move it up, move it down, swish it around, get a little more saliva on it. Extract every bit of pleasure from that, because that is Krishna's mercy in the form of pleasure coming to us. And the result is we thank the Lord for that mercy. Similarly, when we read these books and we ponder them, we savor them, we relish them, we feel grateful for them, you get so much more benefit out of them as a result of that mentality. This is not to be just, you know, read quickly, crammed for a test, and then forgotten. This is the life and soul of a devotee, the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is the cream of all the Puranas. And we are so grateful that our Srila Prabhupada has so kindly bestowed this mercy upon us. So before we even open the book, before we even begin reading, we should be thanking the Lord. Thank you so much, Srila Prabhupada, for doing this translation. Otherwise, I'd never read it. I'd never see it. I'd never have any access to it. And the way you have translated it as a pure devotee, not as some impersonalist, and believe me, there are impersonalistic translations of the Bhagavatam. I was looking at one of them. I couldn't believe the Siddhanta, that, you know, we're all God, we all merge into the Lord. The way they describe the whole thing with the gopis, I just wanted to retch, throw up, and leave. So, it was terrible. So, the point is that Prabhupada has given us such a great blessing and benediction. And our position should be, before we even, as I said, start reading, thank you, Prabhupada, for giving me this wonderful opportunity to become free of all the miseries that I've been experiencing my whole life and all my lives. I owe you so much. Now, with your great blessings, please bless me that I may understand what I'm going to read and that I may relish what I'm reading. May I appreciate what I'm reading. And may I try to share this wonderful knowledge and information with as many persons as you enable me or help me to achieve. So this is the goal. The goal of all of us is to try to become like King Ambarish. We should not think, well, I'm just, I'm just born in Brooklyn, New York. How can I become like Ambarish? You know, I was just born in San Francisco. I'm just an ordinary human being. Well, we are ordinary human beings in one sense, but Prabhupada has given us the means, the reason, the way to become extraordinary. And we should take that very, very seriously and very, very thankfully. And if we do that, we will become extraordinary but not in and of ourselves, from ourselves, but because we have drawn forth the blessings of the Supreme Lord, who is pleased with our devotional service. And when the Lord is pleased, then he bestows his graces, bestows his gifts upon us, and the result is ever-increasing happiness, ever-increasing ecstasy, ever-increasing love of God. And that's what the goal of life is, pure love of God. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you. Okay, Brigupati has his hand up. He's ready to slap me down. I can see that. This is our number one book distributor in the whole world, so I don't like to go up against him. Yes, go ahead. Champ.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. Nice class. And what you said about me is inaccurate. I'm a book distributor, but I'm not number one in the world and no longer champ. Well, thank you, though.
Well, who is number one?
I don't know.
Yes, you
I
do. Okay, go ahead.
So I heard most of the class on the internet.
But go ahead.
I apologize for not being here physically.
Yeah,
but
could
I
you speak a little louder?
My question is about mystic powers.
Yeah.
Okay. Can the devotee, I got the impression from hearing you speak that it sounds like a devotee has these mystic powers and he can invoke them at will, but he doesn't care to do that.
Louder.
The devotee has the mystic powers,
yeah,
and if he wants to, he can invoke them at will, but he doesn't care to do that.
Yeah.
From lectures I've heard where Srila Prabhupada is speaking, I got the impression that it's the devotee is just doing his devotional service and then, you know, Krishna just does something mystical at some point. And he's not invoking it. It's just kind of like bestowed upon him by Krishna. However, I did think of one example. There's a devotee of Lord Chaitanya. I think his name was Sarangadas Thakur.
Who?
Sarangadas Thakur. He was constantly being inspired by Lord Chaitanya from within his heart to take disciples, and he didn't want to. Finally, he agreed. He said, okay, the next person I see tomorrow, I will make him my disciple. And that person happened to be a dead body floating down the Ganges River, and he touched him, and he came back to life, and he made him a disciple. So that seems like to be almost, you know, an example of invoking a mystic power at will. So I just wonder if you could say something more on this subject. Is it there? The devotee can invoke the mystic powers at will? Are they entirely bestowed upon him by Krishna, just as in the course of his devotional service? It is a combination of both, and it is, yeah, basically that.
Yes. Thank you. Very nice question. The question, it's actually both, and I'll explain that. As far as mystic powers goes, as a devotee goes higher and higher in spiritual advancement or pure love of God, certain things take place in the subtle beings, such as certain chakras, they do open up. And when certain chakras open up, they become powers are released automatically from that force, which is called Kundalini force. It goes up. In the case of devotees, it goes up automatically. They don't even think about it, but as their ecstasies increase, those things are happening within the subtle body. That's the first thing. Second thing is that they do know that they have them, but out of humility, a real, pure, true devotee is not for putting on shows. He doesn't care to do that. That's not his interest, and rather he prefers the only show, if he's going to do anything, is to show his devotees or his disciples that the best thing you can do is to depend upon Krishna. This is most important. This is what you want to teach persons, not that to do these breathings and then bring the kundalini up and then get control, because that brings pride. It brings arrogance. It brings vanity. It brings conceit. I have something that others don't have. Whereas a devotee, he just depends upon Krishna and considers that he doesn't have anything. But there are times when he's inwardly guided to use those powers. I'll give you a very good example. Hanuman. Hanuman had to cross the Bay of Bengal. That's what we call it today. So he had to cross that. He had to leap. He was the only one of all the monkeys who could actually reach from the shore of India, the mainland, to Sri Lanka. So that was the first thing. And the second thing, he wanted to fly there. That would be the fastest way. Swimming is definitely not going to get him there as fast as flying, as we know that boats don't go as fast as planes. So what he did is that he made himself as large as he had to. He was like a pole mountain. And then he flew. He stopped on Mount Mainika, I think, for a short time. And then he finally reached Sri Lanka. And when he got to Lanka, he had to use another mystic powers because they would see him. So what he did, he made himself like a small little kitty cat. Just so little. And then he got through the gate. So he used his powers for the loving service of Ramchandra. He never considered that those powers were inherent in himself, but were actually awarded to him as a result of his devotional love and service to Lord Ramachandra. In other words, he considered those powers the Lord's, Ramachandra's, whom he was just like, if you have a car and I need to get someplace, I don't have a car, so I borrow your car. So I don't think it's my car, I think it's Bhrigupati's car. And then when I come back, if you let me keep the car, fine. Or if you want the car back, fine. It doesn't matter. But the main point is, I know it's your car. I know it's not mine. This is devotee. Another very good example is Haridas Thakur. When he was beaten in 22 marketplaces, the persons who were doing the beating became... Haridas Thakur was completely peaceful, very calm, very controlled. He was praying for his oppressors. He was praying, please save them, Lord, save them. Finally, at the 22nd marketplace, and he still was not dead. So they were scared that the governor was going to have to beat them and then kill them. It wouldn't take more than one marketplace for them. But Haridas Thakur, 22 marketplaces. So they said, if you don't die, we're going to die. So feeling sorry for them, feeling compassionate for them, he said, okay, you want me to die? I'll die. So he said, you'll die? Yes, I'll die. So he lay down, closed his eyes, his breathing stopped, his heart stopped, and they felt, he's dead. For all intents and purposes, he looked dead. He said, well, should we bury him? You know, he's a Muslim. No, no, he's a bad Muslim. Throw him in the Ganges River. So they threw him in the river, and he floated along for... who knows, 10, 15, 20 minutes. And then he just awoke. He came back to what we call sensual consciousness, began swimming, and he went back to the sand, you know, the shore. And then he went walking into the governor's office. And when the governor saw him, you know, his eyes practically popped out of his head. And he says, Haridas, whatever you want to do, wherever you want to go, the place is yours. He says, I am convinced that whatever you say must be right, and you are totally and completely in touch with God. Thank you very much. So there we have two examples. There are many other examples where devotees were called upon at different times. That's a mystic power. Haridas Thakur leaving his body when he wanted to is a mystic power. I can't do it. Can you do it? You can't do it. None of us can do that. It's above and beyond what we call the norm. Okay, so that's a mystic power. There are so many other mystic powers that devotees have, which they are reluctant to use unless absolutely necessary. And then when people begin to glorify them and honor them for that particular power, they don't even want to hear about it because they don't believe it's theirs. They believe it belongs to Krishna. Any other questions? Does that answer your question, Bhrigupati?
Yeah.
It does answer it. Okay. Yeah. I want to be sure that... another person? Yeah, please, go ahead. Yeah, someone with the microphone can please deliver it. Yeah, because this is for the internet people. Thank you.
Thank you for a nice class. I know it's kind of late, so I'll just ask very briefly. You mentioned that Ambarish Maharaj fasted on water for an entire year. And... I was wondering, a lot of us are following the Purushottam month, Vrata, and offering this sacrifice and this tapasya, that austerity, whatever. Why would a pure devotee like him have to come to such an extent of tapasya? What does he gain from it? A lot of people would look at us and say, like, wait, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this sacrifice? Does Krishna get any pleasure from you not eating or just drinking water? What is the purpose?
Well, first of all, fasting is not easy, as we all know here. Fasting is very, very difficult. What would he gain out of such a lengthy fast? his feeling, basically, is that he was the cause of this Sudarshan Chakra. It was given to him by Krishna, and it manifested on his behalf to protect him. So, therefore, the chakra went running after him, and there was a chase around the galaxy. And he didn't know one way or another whether Durvasa Muni had been killed or not. And his desire was that he should be saved. And fasting is a legitimate way it's an austerity. And austerity has power. It has merit. It has glory. So when you perform an austerity, it means you gain certain of that power. And his hope, this is my understanding, is his hope is that the yogi would not be killed, he would be spared, and that he would be able to finally feed him, which he did. Finally, when the Durvasa came back and he offered his apologies, then he gave him a big meal and his desire was satisfied. So that's a very high level of sacrifice. And one should not here try fasting on water for a year, because I doubt if any of us will not only achieve it, but I think we'll be doing a cremation not very long after. And that we would not like to do. We don't want anybody dying of starvation here. Remember, Ambarish had those powers. He could use them when it was necessary. And he was not attached to any foods. He could just eat or not eat. It didn't matter. So the main point is that this is a sacrifice so that this yogi could live, and so that he also would not be held culpable for having brought forth, although he didn't deliberately voluntarily bring it forth, but the Sudarshan Chakra that was acting on his behalf went after you. So he wanted to be free of any guilt, number one, and number two, to free the yogi, free the yogi from having been unnecessarily killed. He wanted him to live. That's the only understanding that I would have on that. Okay? Is that all right? Any other question? I see a hand in the back. You have a question? Can someone deliver the microphone to the gentleman sitting against the wall? Well, we have to wait for the microphone. This is the internet. Go ahead.
I have a doubt about the CD powers that you were talking about from the devotees. I was in India many times, and I saw people that are not devotees.
Talk a little louder, please.
And so many people in India, because I was traveling too much to India. I was traveling a lot of times when I was in Europe. And I saw many people that were not devotees, but even so, they have siddhi powers.
They what?
They
had mystic powers. Yeah.
Mystic powers or
yeah.
Siddhi powers, I don't know. And and I wonder why these people have these powers, even if they are not devotees from Krishna. I was thinking, it's my thought, I don't know if I am right or not, but I think these people have a lot of incarnations in the past.
So what is your question? Why these people who are non-devotees have mystic powers? Why Krishna allows them to have it?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, everyone comes into this world to be a lord.
Yeah.
That's why we're here. Lordship can be manifested in so many different ways. A person can be a CEO of a big major company like Sony or General Motors or Kodak or any of these major companies like Microsoft. So people come here to become powerful. That's why they're here. And Krishna, according to their merit, the merits or demerits, may give them or help them or aid them to achieve those powers. Simply because that's what they've come here. They want to feel and taste and experience what it's like to be like a lord. So they get that opportunity. If they misuse those powers, they will eventually lose the powers. Not only that, but they will also have to experience the karmic reaction that comes from misusing the powers. Like Durvasa Muni, he got the reaction instantly. He misused his power, taking this hair, comes up into a, like a big demon, to kill King Ambarish. What was the reaction? The Sudarshan Chakra manifested to kill him. Instant karma. Okay? So, people get karma powers because they desire them. Ultimately, a person who has discrimination, detachment, and ultimately love of God does not care for powers, because he knows that no matter how powerful I or he or she becomes, no one will ever be as powerful as the Supreme Lord Krishna. So what's the point of trying to be powerful? Let me better just depend upon Krishna, as Prahlad Maharaj did, and that will protect me from all dangers, all difficulties, all problems. Like President Reagan, going back so many years, he had secret servicemen all around his car. He got out of the car and someone took a shot and shot him in, he shot him in the belly. And Brady, he got hit in the heart. They had protection but had no protection. So ultimately, Krishna is the real power. So when a person realizes that, they give up this childish desire to want to be powerful. Is there any? I think maybe I'm holding. Let's see what. It's way over. way over. I'll never hear the end of this. Enjoy your prasadam. Thank you all very much. And enjoy New Dwarka. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.